As Rachel said, my name's Tim. I'm a member here, and I'm part of the Alex Park Missional Community. Although we've read the whole chapter, I'm going to be focusing today on the miracles of the feeding of the 5,000 and Jesus and Peter walking on water. It's a little bit of a point of regret to me that when I got to secondary school, I wasn't good enough at cricket to play in the cricket teams. Most of the other kids around me, they'd gone to primary school at really posh prep schools in Cheshire, where they did play cricket. But my state primary school in Didsbury, I'm not trying to make it out as rough, there's not much rough about Didsbury, but they just didn't play cricket. So as I arrived at my secondary school, I just wasn't as good as them. But my older brothers went to different primary schools, and they were good enough, and they passed on to me a motto of one of the cricket coaches, a man called David Moss, who used to teach regarding batting, that balance is power, and it was said in a Lancashire accent, which I'm not going to try. So what he means was, when you face a ball in cricket, if you've got good balance, if you're standing in the correct way, with your feet planted on the floor, when you play a shot, there will be power in it and it'll go a long way. And as we consider these two miracles and look to tie them together, a similar theme is clear. Without a trusting faith in Jesus, you won't take part in his work, bringing his kingdom to the small corner of the world where God has you. Just incidentally, this is David here on the left. And on the right, you might recognise, if you follow cricket, is Mike Atherton, who was also at the school that I was at a long time before, obviously, and became England cricket captain and opening batsman. So the advice must have been worth something. These miracles, so faith is like the balance, and the power is God using you to bring spiritual food to the hungry people all around us. And these miracles, for sure, are amazing demonstrations of Jesus' compassion and also his authority over nature. But if we look deeper, this passage also teaches us a lot about being a disciple, about being disciples. There are ways in which the feeding of the 5,000 was just as much Jesus teaching his disciples about being disciples as miraculously providing for the crowd. And there are also lessons we can take from Peter's walking on water that go deeper than just the miracle itself. I'm going to do something a little bit unorthodox, but I hope you'll understand why. I'm going to talk about the miracle of Jesus and Peter walking on the water first, and then the feeding of the 5,000. My main point for this sermon is going to be trust in Jesus to be used by Jesus. So firstly, let's think about the walking on water and trust in Jesus. Matthew goes out of his way to ensure we know this walking on the water is a miraculous event. Some scholars have suggested Jesus was on kind of some kind of sandbar, but this can't be the case, as we are told it's a long way from the shore, and we know that the Sea of Galilee is deep. I looked it up, and at the deepest point it's 42 metres deep. And we're told that Peter sinks where Jesus is standing. So there's definitely nothing there. On the surface, this is a clear demonstration of Jesus' authority over nature, and it is. But today, I want to focus on what it can teach us about living our lives as disciples. What are we to make of Peter stepping out of the boat? Was this a valid act of faith gone wrong? Or was it a foolish act to try and impress people? Or done out of a childish shot at exhilaration? It wouldn't be the first or the last time Peter showed impulsiveness. But Jesus did invite him to join him. So there's some validation in that this was an act of faith. But from a human perspective, that this must have seemed to him a risk. And so as we step out of our own comfort, for sure, there is an element of risk, or at least it feels like it. But with Jesus, is there really any risk? At first, Peter has strong faith, and this keeps him stood on the water. But when he saw the wind and the waves around him, he starts to doubt, and he starts to sink. This is an illustration of the vulnerable position a disciple falls into if they allow doubt, a natural human perspective, to replace faith in the supernatural power of God. Sustained belief is not possible without trust, and doubt is the predator of trust. We all have our own wind and waves around us, threatening circumstances which lead us to take our eyes off Jesus. And as disciples, this is a great opportunity to pause and ask ourselves, what are they? We know in our heads that God is a God who provides and protects us and who has a perfect plan for us, but do our emotions know this? Are we fearful about money, relationships, what other people think of us? We live in a world which leads and pushes us into being preoccupied with material wealth, personal image, and influence. But Jesus is the only one who can sustain us and fulfill and fill our need for acceptance. Of course, circumstances and situations will come into our lives that will either be difficult, leading us to be fixated on them and how to get out of them, and we might doubt Jesus' power to see us through. Excuse me. Or they might be really good, leading us to think we're great at being in control. We've earned this. And we subconsciously, we can deny our need for God. But let's hone in on the cause of Peter's doubt here. His doubt comes from the fact that he can feel and see the wind. The evidence from his physical senses overpowering Jesus' invitation. And we're all guilty of this. Letting our senses and feelings overpower the invitation of Jesus gives us to trust him. To trust in his miraculous power. And it's a miraculous power that we see in spectacular fashion in the feeding of the 5,000. And this is where we move on to think about how we can be used by Jesus. Before I do, though, I just want to comment on something awesome about Jesus' character we see here. It's striking that after Jesus came here to be alone, when the crowds came, he had compassion on them. There's no hint of resentment. And this strikes me as a really clear marker of the purity and brilliance of Jesus' character. To be annoyed when our plans don't go our way, and for the introverts among us, when people won't leave us alone, when we just need some time alone, it's human. It will come naturally, but not to Jesus. He can turn from introvert to compassionate, extroverted healer and provider to a crowd of thousands in an instant. People remember this episode for the feeding of the 5,000, but if we read carefully, we also read that before he did this, Jesus healed all of them who were ill. That must have been a lot of people. We don't know whether this was all at once or one by one, but whichever, it's remarkable. Now, Matthew doesn't even bat an eyelid in relating this, and he just carries on with the story. This is how normal it was for Jesus to perform these kind of miracles, such that Matthew doesn't feel the need to comment on it. But when it comes to the feeding of the 5,000, Matthew allows no doubt, just like with the walking water, as to the scale of the miracle. No one can say, oh, but they only got a little bit each. No, Matthew says everyone got all they wanted, and there were 12 baskets left over. And the word for basket here refers to a large, heavy basket, bigger than needed for 5 loaves and 2 fish. And it's called the feeding of the 5,000, but as it says, the 5,000 was just the men. It didn't include the women and children. Could easily have been double that number. And the way Matthew tells it here implies that the exact number doesn't really matter, no matter how many people there were. Jesus fed them all with 12 baskets left over. Now, it's surprising that there's no mention of the reaction of the crowd. Maybe we're to conclude that they didn't know where it had come from. It's the disciples, not the crowd, who are the ones who will be seeing this miracle most clearly. And there are some lessons we can learn from this miracle to apply to our own context as missionaries in Chorlton. First, as I say, Jesus uses us. He had the power to magic the food into everyone's hands there, even their stomach. But he chose to tell the disciples, you give them something to eat. Interestingly, when we're talking about the sitting down, the Greek verb here is translated as to sit on couches. In the Greek and Roman world and in the Jewish context, it would suggest a more formal meal than a picnic. What's more, in this and all the other accounts of the miracle feedings in the gospel, the writers use the same sequence of verbs as is used in the narrative of the Last Supper. And this is no accident. It shows that these miracles, this one included, are foretastes of that last meal on the night before Jesus died. And the Last Supper itself is a foretaste of the banquet we will enjoy in heaven. The significance of this miracle grows further when we think about these things. And it echoes events before in biblical history as well. Most clearly, the provision of manna to Israel in the desert that we learn about in Exodus. And Jesus is being presented here as the new and better Moses. And as disciples today, if we trust Jesus, we should expect to be used by him for his miraculous purposes. He chooses to use us, not because of our talents, but because as his children, he loves to involve us in his work. Many of you will know I've got three small children, twin boys of four and then a two-and-a-half-year-old daughter. They've been running around, I'm sure you've seen them. They're at an age now when they can and they want to help with some of the chores around the house, like stacking the dishwasher. And I love seeing them do this. But do I think I could do it better? You bet. And I saw a meme recently that states that a dishwasher can be stacked in two different ways according to who's doing the stacking, either like a Scandinavian architect or a raccoon on meth. And this is just two pictures of what it could look like. We all know it. I definitely tend towards the Scandinavian architect. You know, when I was a teenager and me and my brothers were given the job as clearing up the evening meal and doing the dishes, I was the delegated dishwasher stacker. And I developed such a detailed system that worked for our dishwasher. And I got so annoyed when others didn't follow it that I actually printed it out and put it on the fridge. Now, I'm not at that level anymore. But I definitely have conventions that I try to follow. The kids definitely don't conform to these. But you know what? I love to see them joining in because it's teaching them about the importance of helping around the house. And hopefully they'll want to do it for longer. But I might have to start introducing some incentives as they get older. And when they're gone, of course, I put it in my system most of the time. And it's the same with Jesus. Even though we're imperfect, we're weak, and we make mistakes every day, he loves to involve us in his work. And as we saw in Matthew 9:37 as well, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Make no mistake, we are in the same position as the disciples here. This story tells of at least 5,000 hungry people, and only Jesus could feed them. And as disciples, we're in a similar place, only probably with a bigger harvest. In Chorlton, according to the 2021 census, there are a little under 12,843 people, the vast, vast majority of whom are not Christians. And us as Christians here in this room and other Christians at other churches in Chorlton, we are in a tiny minority. But so are the 12 disciples. He will use us here in this room to feed the spiritually hungry people of Chorlton. Unlike the miracle, not all of them will be fed, Because as we learned a few weeks ago, the spiritual seed we can bring must fall on good soil to flourish. Much of it will fall on the path, the rocks, or among the thorns. But we are the workers distributing the seed and the bread that is the gospel. That is our task. And it is God who will do the hard work of bringing someone to faith in him. Secondly, Jesus uses what they already have. He could have magicked enough food out of thin air if he'd wanted to. But they already had the loaves and the fish, and Jesus miraculously multiplies it to feed the huge crowd. So too, God uses what we already have, or more accurately, what he's given us. Talents, resources, time. It is through our sacrificial generosity with these things. You know, you can bet that the disciples were looking forward to tucking into that bread and fish themselves, that God will use us for his kingdom's advance right here in Chorlton. It doesn't mean we can never say no to things. God has made us with limits, and we want to give well to what we do give to. It's impossible to do everything. And that's a good thing. We are called to use our talents and time resources wisely. So there are some questions we can ask ourselves as disciples in light of this miracle. And again, it's less about the miracle itself, but how Jesus chooses to use his disciples to do it. All non-believers are spiritually hungry, but not all of them know it. And it'll be a far smaller and easier step for us to focus on those who do. Those are the people in our lives who do know it. And they might not use the same words. They might not say, oh, I'm spiritually hungry. But can you spot where things that they are putting their trust in are letting them down? Can you spot where they are striving for something but aren't reaching it? And if you can't answer this question, maybe a stage before it is to intentionally show interest in the people around you. Intentionally ask questions beyond just how you're doing. Well, that's a good place to start. Try to remember what they said they were doing at the weekend and ask how it went. Celebrate their successes and listen to their problems. It's through this approach, really caring about someone's life, that we will learn who around us on some level know that they are spiritually hungry. And that leads us to another question we can ask ourselves, which I think links to the attitude shift we saw from Jesus in this passage. Are we able to look above our own circumstances and desires and show compassion for the spiritually lost and hungry people around us? We won't be able to do it to the same extent as Jesus because we're not perfect like Jesus. But this is something we can aspire to. You know, someone once said, one of your greatest challenges is to care for others when we're struggling ourselves. Now, if we try to do this with everyone we meet, it will lead to emotional burnout. We're not Jesus. We are humans with finite emotional energy. But God will place people in our lives or place us in their lives for a reason. And that reason is to bring them, one at a time, the food of the gospel. The disciples would have given out the bread and the fish to one person at a time. But still, we can only do this through God's power. Are we asking God to carry us through so that we are alert to those who around us who need our help, who need the gospel? So how do we tie these two stories together? They both have important lessons to be learned about being a disciple. It's true that throughout the Bible and beyond, God uses broken and sinful people to achieve his works and purposes. Noah preserved humanity and nature through the flood, but became a drunkard afterwards. David was Israel's greatest human king and wrote beautiful psalms, yet was an adulterer who effectively had a man killed to cover it up. Paul orchestrated the persecution and execution of Christians but became one of the greatest evangelists, the first evangelist in history, one of the greatest in history. Broken, sinful people being used for God's glorious purposes. But they cannot be used to claim that God will use us regardless of how we live our lives, because they all had incredible faith. Noah trusted God by building an ark when others around him were laughing at him, miles away from any water. David trusted God whilst being pursued by people intent on killing him. Paul was imprisoned for preaching the gospel, yet rejoiced at this and praised God for how he was working through his imprisonment. And he wrote letters from prison, which have been encouraging and teaching Christians for millennia. God will use broken, sinful people. In fact, that's the only kind of person he's got available to him. We are all broken and sinful. But he cannot use people who doubt his power and don't trust him. And these two stories demonstrate how faith is a platform for mission. Jesus is calling all of us to step out of our comfort zones to join in his work. I want us to wonder what the disciples' reaction was when Jesus asked them to feed a huge crowd with 5 loaves and 2 fish. Matthew doesn't record it. Maybe it was, this is our bread and fish, and you're asking us to give it away? Maybe it was certainty that it was going to feed everyone. More likely, a nervous and uncertain obedience. But as the miracle unfolded, and it became clear that the bread and fish wasn't running out, imagine the confidence and amazement that must have given them. And this should encourage us. However little we think we have to offer, God can and will use it if we step out in faith and join in his mission. We might think we are too busy to be evangelists, but do we have a few moments every time we greet a colleague or a parent at the school gates to take an interest in their lives? Our lives could be full of work and family commitments, but showing up 90 minutes earlier to church to help set up makes these gatherings happen, and through which we preach the gospel to the people of Chorlton. And this echoes what Greg shared with us last week. Small acts can make a big difference. However little you think you have, God can and will use it. And there's another echo of last week, being all in. Peter didn't set up some safety line to the boat to attach him. He didn't keep one hand grabbing on the side. He did leave the boat with his whole body. And I should say that we don't do this in our own power. Was it the disciples' skill in dividing up the loaves and the fish would make it go around the whole crowd? Of course not. Was it Peter's power that he walked on water? Of course not. We have the power of Jesus flowing through us as we do small things day in, day out to bring the food of the gospel to those around us. But if you're here listening to this and you wouldn't call yourself a Christian, we're really glad that you're here. Clearly, you're not really in a place where you're thinking about joining in his work. But can I ask you, are you hungry? Is something missing in your life? Are you struggling to work out why you're here and whether there's something more than just the daily grind? Can I point us again to the brilliance and awesomeness of Jesus' character that we see in this passage? That when he wanted time to himself, when this was ruined by 5,000 people rocking up, his attitude flipped immediately to compassion for them. And then using his disciples, he fed them. This could be you. And if it is, and you want to know more, don't leave today without speaking to someone, anyone who's been at the